market right now. More than high. I'm Bill Zerman, and welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Show. The show number is 3790 in our original It's Your Business series. Quite the show today. Everything from Mr. Tree at the end of the hour, which was kind of a bonus, to a lot about Holstone. Joining us in studio, Executive Director Carla Hoffhinke and Luke Rendell, South Dakota Farmers Union Communication. Carla, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. It's great to be inside where it's nice and cool today.
Yes, it is. And Luke, you helped me put the show together.
We certainly did. We've got a big array of topics to talk about today. Anything from obviously this big Holstone project that's going on here in the eastern part of the state. You know, we're going to cover the whole entire state, too, a little bit on the western project, too, with a beef and bison plant going on out there as well.
Healthcare, cattle, Farm Bureau priorities. We're going to be talking a little bit about the National Farmers Union and everything that they do. And, of course, last month we talked about the Kingsbury Beef Bison Project for Rapid City that could process 8,000 head a day. Today, Holstone Farms Pork Plant for Sioux Falls. Luke Minion is with us. Luke, what's your position exactly? I've seen six different titles for you, but what is it?
Well, today, Bill, the one that's important to highlight is I'm chairman of the board of Holstone Farms, and that's what's most important to talk about today.
All right. Seems to be a little disagreement. You don't want to fight, but you want to set up at least to start a custom butcher shop.
Yeah, given our situation there in Sioux Falls, the farmers that own that project and own that site, these farmers have spent, you know, 5 years. We are blessed and grateful to have the support of the community, and we have some that have opposed, of course, but we've worked hard to have that site. The custom butcher shop is a way to interact with the community and get started right away, and in fact, construction has already started, and We think it's a great way to demonstrate how local farmers will interact with community, and they on our website they'll be able to go pick a farmer and get a hog delivered and get it custom butchered and turned into some Holstone products. And while we're doing that, it'll preserve our right to expand the site later.
So, what do you think those people that order a pig to get butchered through the Holstone process are going to find about what you do and how you do it?
Well, I think they're going to love the products, first of all. They're going to love the fact that the local farmers raise those pigs and are proud of what they do, and an opportunity to interact with producers and a local company that is trying to expand here in Sioux Falls, I think, is unique. And I think it exemplifies sort of what Holstone should and will be for the Sioux Falls community long term, which is a great project, a wonderful thing for the city and for our community. And you know, we're excited to showcase that with a butcher shop.
You didn't want to divide the community. Is the community really divided beyond those 1,000 that signed?
Well, I first want to say I acknowledge the concerns in the community. We've done our best to address those. We're confident that our business plan is sound and something that everyone in Sioux Falls can be proud of, and it is new and modern. I personally think that the division of our community, there's enough issues in life we divide over. We don't need to divide over something like modern food production owned by local farmers in Sioux Falls. And so all throughout this process, myself and the board of Holstone have been very thoughtful about saying we want to do the project. We believe that the majority of the people in Sioux Falls will want us to do the project. We're very confident that the leadership in the state and the city support us. And despite the concerns and opposition, we want to move forward, and this is a way to do that.
I haven't talked to anybody in the city, anybody with a chamber, or anybody statewide that says you didn't do everything you were asked.
Absolutely. And again, just to try to highlight not Luke Minion, but the 200-plus farmers that own Holstone, we've approached this as an opportunity unlike most companies. We've asked for no tax increment financing, no favors from the community, follow every rule, check every box 4+ years into it, and we're confident we have the support of every level, and we're so thankful and grateful for that. And we're also, we hope, unique in that a $600 million project come to town and ask for nothing other than an opportunity to complete the program here. So, you know, listen, I'm proud of the farmers I represent. I think the community would be proud if it allows Holstone to continue. And the simple message for me is the petition is a bad thing for Sioux Falls, and Holstone's a good thing.
I understand in talking to people that have been to the Fremont plant that some changes were made to make it even better. And we're looking at those kind of modern changes for here.
Yes, certainly the plant in Fremont has been significantly improved, and the community there has received Holstone with open arms, and a lot of compliments we've received from the leadership there. These are modern facilities, wonderful working conditions for the team, very acceptable and how they present themselves on the exterior. So again, we think that the image people have in mind basis what's there today in Sioux Falls versus what we're building is so different and so important that if this ballot issue does happen, that we really want to urge people to learn more, look at what we're doing, not what the image they picture now is. There's a big difference, and we think you'll see it our way if you take the time to learn more.
So you got this custom butcher shop. Can people go ahead and order a pig?
Yeah. Bill, we're working on getting the website ready to take those orders. I've enjoyed the last few days. There's already been some local residents of Sioux Falls place their order, so thank you for that. And for those that want to do so, we'll get the website up and running soon.
There will be some that will say any packing facility, any processing plant will have a smell to it. For those that don't quite understand, what are you doing to arrest that smell?
Well, thanks for asking. Again, for those that want to learn more, on our website, HolstoneFarms.com, you can learn specifically about odor mitigation. But there's three levels. First is just the design of the facility, and that's significant and really important. The second is we scrub the air with what they call wet scrubbers, all the air that's emitted from our facility. So that's a very significant investment. And the third, which nobody does, it's way beyond any requirements, far exceeds any plant we know of in the United States, and that's thermal oxidized air. We are extremely confident that this facility has the highest odor mitigation in all of the USA, and extremely confident that this particular project, we have done the very best technology has to offer today, and I believe it's, you know, a beautiful thing, and that odor from our facility is next to zero.
Luke, appreciate the update. Keep us posted. Hope those orders keep coming in.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Listening to that interview was Carla Hoffhenke, South Dakota Farmers Union Executive Director. Luke, Farmers Union Communications. Out of the great state of Minnesota, out of Marshall, Mike Borboom and Brad Greenway from Mount Vernon, South Dakota. Brad, going to talk to you first. Your thoughts on what you've heard, what ought to be done. How do we get this to move on down the road past an election in November?
Well, thanks for having us on, first off, Bill. And as listening to Luke's comments, I think the main thing is just to get the name out there of Holstone Farms and what it is, and people that want more information, obviously, you said go to the website. But I think the thing is starting in this process, and anytime you can connect consumers with where their food comes from and the farmers that raise it, I think is a good thing. And so this is a way of getting that process started, and you know, a way of getting the local community connected with what Holstone's trying to do in Sioux Falls.
Mike Borboom, he's out of Marshall, Minnesota. He talked about the scrubbing. Scrubbing of the air, is that a big deal in the pork process?
Yeah, it is. And again, I appreciate you having us here, and I think, like so many things that operate on farms and within agriculture today, the technology of packing plants has really developed and evolved over the last 100 years, and the technology that we're looking at putting into the plants in Sioux Falls, as Luke said, it's like none else out there. It is technology that is new and fresh, and really will will minimize the odor impact from the plants.
Gentlemen, interested in your insight with COVID. Obviously, there was issues with supply chain disruptions. I'm interested in your experiences during that time. Were you susceptible to some of those challenges, and do you see this as being maybe a solution?
Yeah, this is Brad. I guess I can go first. We were affected at the time of COVID. Right now, a portion of our pigs, we take our pigs off our family farm to three different packing plants. And I'd have to say the Holstone plant that we went to in Fremont, Nebraska, they did very well at mitigating the issues with the team down there. And all of the pigs that we had going to Holstone in Fremont, we were able to get in. A couple of the other packers were not. We were only allowed to bring about 60% of what we had contracted. And so I'll tell you what, the good thing is we didn't have to euthanize any pigs, where some folks do it, and it was just as really a shame. But we found alternative markets. So I literally sent a load to Florida. We sent loads to California. We took them down to the local livestock market in Platte. We sold probably 150 to 200 to our neighbors if they had the ability and the place to store that. And so this is a way, back to your question, of helping mitigate that. I mean, to have another facility locally for us would have been a big thing at the time when COVID came through, because it was very concerning, you know, where we were going to go with our pigs. And in the end, we were able to get rid of all of them, but a lot of alternative markets in between that time.
Well, I appreciate the input. I totally agree. I have heard during the COVID months and years almost that, you know, so many animals did have to be euthanized, which is just a terrible waste. You know, piggybacking off of your comment about local locker plants, trying to get animals in there. Boy, what a challenge. You know, I personally have tried to get some animals in, and boy, you have to call in about a year in advance, it seems like, nowadays. So, you know, it's good to have options out there, and this might be a very viable one.
Carla, do you have a question?
Well, with ag being our number one industry in South Dakota, how is this going to affect all the pork producers in the state?
Yeah, I think the end goal to build a farmer-owned packing plant, the modern facility that's being proposed, it'll provide a tremendous amount of value to the producers in South Dakota. It'll give, and all of agriculture for that matter, you know, rural Southwest Minnesota, South Dakota, we rely on producing food, or the market to produce food for the rest of the country and the world. And having access to another market right in Sioux Falls, it'd be huge for producers. They'll have options. They'll have the ability to sell pigs to a plant that some of them own and some of them may not own, but just get an opportunity to go ahead and market their pigs. So it'll provide, I think, a tremendous amount of value to the overall ag economy.
Brad, you talked about Fremont. What's the difference between what you saw at Holstone and Fremont and the facility we have that are doing pork in Sioux Falls right now?
You know, the Fremont plant, and we had it as one of the 200 owners of Fremont. We had an opportunity to go down there right when our group purchased it. And to see that plant, and I've been through a number of plants, but to see that plant, you know, with the state that it was in and the excitement about the renovations that were going to take place. And to see the plant now of how it's been transformed. And I think, and the thing that I'm most proud of, and I've told this to a number of people when we went down there, the very first things that Holstone Farms wanted to do to upgrade the Hormel plant was, how do we take care of the employees? I mean, the valued team that's down there and the workforce that's doing the jobs for us as farmers and owners, how do we take care of them? So from new lockers to lunch rooms, so they had a big, bright lunchroom so they could eat in, you know, in two shifts instead of six or seven shifts. And so the transformation, and I think Luke touched on it, the community in Fremont has just welcomed what Holstone has done. And I think the thing that I'm most proud of is what they've done, and their very first priority was to take care of the team members that are actually doing the work in the plant the highest priority was to get them taken care of first and then to continue the upgrades. And so it's exciting what's happened down there. And honestly, when you see the drawings, if you go on the website for Holstone and what's proposed in Sioux Falls, you know, what it will look like, it's just a very modern, very awesome-looking facility, honestly.
Brad Greenway, Mount Vernon, South Dakota. Mike Borboom out of Marshall, Minnesota. Appreciate you guys weighing in along with Luke Minion. He is the leader with Holstone, and we'll see where this chapter goes next. Gentlemen, thank you. The National Farmers Union President, Rob LaRue, are you with us this morning?
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Hey, Rob, thank you. Vice President Jeff Kipley, are you with us this morning?
I sure am, Bill.
I understand we're going to talk about priorities this morning. Luke, you want to lead us in?
Yeah, absolutely. Big topic here this year with the Farm Bill coming up, obviously. President LaRue and Vice President Kipley, thank you for joining us. NFU has got a set of priorities for the 2023 Farm Bill, and I was just hoping maybe you could shed some light on what some of these priorities may be.
Yeah, I appreciate the question here. Farm Bill's on everybody's mind already. And for Farmers Union, certainly, we've been listening to the farmers and ranchers out there for quite some time now leading up to Farm Bill. And really the biggest priorities that we have as an organization from the farmer and producer level is, number one, competition. A lot of the success that Farmers Union has had with leading the charge, whether it's in the beef industry or even consolidation, you know, all across agriculture through our Fairness for Farmers campaign, competition in the Farm Bill has to be addressed. There's a few ways to do that, but we'll certainly be fighting to make sure that there's policies so we can bring some fairness back to agriculture. Will be a front burner issue for us. Next is making sure that the safety net that's in there for the farm programs and for crop insurance remains strong and viable. And along with that, returning some sense of reliability to a permanent disaster program. We know that disasters are going to be part of this future, whether, you know, exactly what it's going to look like, but, you know, prolonged droughts and so forth. Farmers need options, and they need a program that's in place that gives them certainty so they don't have to be left guessing whether or not government's going to get around to doing any help there. Farmers can be able to bank on a program there. But there's a number of other priorities there, but really it's about competition, making sure that we have a strong safety net out there, supporting, continuing to support the development and growth of biofuels, for example. All of these things, Farm Bill is so hugely important to us.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you, Rob, for that. Jeff, I do have a question for you. You're obviously well-knowledged in the cattle industry, raising cattle yourself. One of the pillars that Farmers Union is working on is competition. You could call it a subtopic here, but cool. How important is cool to the nation and South Dakota?
You know, I think it's vitally important. I think consumers deserve to know where their food comes from. Producers deserve to have their food properly labeled. And so if you look back to when cool got taken off the table through that WTO lawsuit, we really did lose market. Our prices dropped gradually but sharply over that time, you know, consistently since that time. Now that we start bringing some competition arguments back to the forefront, we see the cattle prices starting to straighten out a little bit and come up. If we could get cool out there, I think for the long-term success of the American farmer, it's a needed tool.
So Jeff, as we listen to you guys this morning, I know that you're getting a lot of people visiting in D.C., a lot of people that have questions. You know, they like to rally with the Farmers Union. They like to rally with other farm groups. What kind of questions are you getting as corn and soybeans and all these folks come into D.C.? What would you tell us, Rob?
Well, you know, this is a little bit of an insider thing, but, you know, farm bills, sometimes one of the big things that come up early on is, is there going to be any new money? Because we're all concerned about, you know, government spending and getting too far out ahead of our skis and so forth. But I really think that, you know, in the overall scope of the federal budget, we can't let programs that help support agriculture, that help support our food supply out there, you know, really a national security issue. We can't let trying to cut back and cut corners be a part of the conversation here. So right now, a lot of the conversation is about, will there be new money? Will there be enough money to write a farm bill like we need to have it written? And certainly, I think a lot of groups out there are arguing that we can't shortchange the programs. That means we need to be responsible with the money that we have available, but we shouldn't shortchange farmers or, you know, by extension, consumers out there.
And Rob and Jeff, I think I'll follow up with this last pillar in these farm bill issues. But, you know, Rob, you had talked about energy and talk about, you know, a very important issue when it comes to the nation's security is energy independence. Great opportunity is ethanol. I mean, Mr. Zomke had just put an op-ed in the Argus Leader here not too long ago discussing about how if we could switch, you know, X amount of vehicles over to E30, how many billion gallons of oil would be not needed anymore, basically. So big national security issue, is it not?
Oh, it's massive. And not only that, but right now, as everybody's experiencing, you know, a lot of pressure on their wallets right now with prices high everywhere. I mean, what better way to get released immediately by actually taking advantage of higher blends of ethanol like E30 out there? I mean, it's smart from a national security point of view. It is smart from a human health point of view. It is smart from a climate and what the future holds here, all of those reasons are the reasons why we should be doing every kind of method possible to expand and grow our not just ethanol, but quite frankly, all of our biofuels. But E30 is an easy answer right now that's available today.
Well, gentlemen, we appreciate you. Rob LaRue, National President, and Jeff Kipley, Vice President, National Farmers Union. Appreciate you weighing in today.
Glad to be with you,
Bill.
All right, lots to talk about yet. Don't you go away. Welcome back to the South Dakota Farmers Union Hour. Carla Hawkenke, Executive Director. Luke Rendell is Mr. Communication. I'm just Bill Zortman, bringing everybody together today. And would you like Carla to introduce our next guest?
Our next guest is Aaron Shire. He's our Senior Government Relations at National Farmers Union. Welcome, Aaron.
Hey, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on the show today.
Luke, we're going to talk about cattle legislation updates. What do you want to cover?
Well, obviously, cattle legislation is a huge topic the last couple of years. You know, there's been issues with price discovery, price transparency. Aaron, on the national level, going through Congress, what are you seeing?
Yeah, Luke, agree. There's some significant pieces of legislation in play right now that are, you know, responding to the concentrated marketplace and the presence of just a few packers and, you know, about trying to address some resiliency issues for cattle ranchers. And what we're seeing is that in the House, the full House passed the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act in the middle of June as part of a broader package. And then the Senate Ag Committee passed both that Special Investigator Act and an additional bill on cattle price discovery and transparency a little bit later in June, meaning those bills can now be considered by the full Senate. But you still need the Senate to pass the Special Investigator Bill and need both chambers to pass the Price Discovery and Transparency Bill. The NFU is going to keep pushing for those bills. We know South Dakota Farmers Union has been doing this important work as well and doing a great job of helping lawmakers understand why we need this legislation.
So many moving pieces in this cattle legislation going on right now, and specifically with the special investigator. Aaron, What would this special investigator, what would they really be doing?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act, it's led in the Senate by Senators Tester and Grassley, bipartisan legislation, and it would create at USDA an office with the power to investigate and prosecute violations of the Packers and Stockyards Act, you know, that important law that protects ranchers, those raising livestock, from undue practices or preferences and other problems in the marketplace, and really serves with this. The bill would also allow USDA to better liaise with the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission to bring actions when they're needed, when the law is being broken. So it'd bring more fairness to cattle markets.
Well, I think that would create at least a sense of relief or comfort to at least to maybe some producers that are out there, knowing that there's watchful eyes.
That's right. Yeah, I think it would strengthen that oversight at USDA, and I think that's exactly right, Luke.
Cool. Obviously a big issue in the nation. We had it once, right? And we lost it. So we're still fighting for it at the state level as well as the National Farmers Union level. Any update going through Congress right now on COOL?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up COOL. And that's the other major bill, I'd say, in the suite of sort of cattle bills out there. And Senators Thune, Tester, Rounds, and Booker have a bill that would reinstate mandatory country of origin labeling for beef to ensure American producers can fairly differentiate their product from farm beef. And that's something we're pushing for as well. No major updates on that at the moment, but all these three pieces are really important to make sure cattle ranchers have a fair shake.
Well, I think they certainly fit together, obviously. And, you know, if we could somehow miraculously put them all together, you know, I think that would hopefully create a sense of strength within our cattle industry, not only strength, but consistency. I mean, how many times do we see these cattle markets fluctuate so much? And,
right.
You know, I just think it adds a level of security. Obviously, the cattle rancher doesn't have a crop insurance program to fall back on. So having some honesty and transparency within this cattle industry is crucial.
I completely agree. And I think that's why the work that South Dakota Farmers Union is doing here is so important. And we'll, of course, keep pushing on these three pieces here at the national level. And, you know, time is running out in the 117th Congress. We need to make a final big push here to get these pieces across the finish line. If you want to learn more, you know, go to South Dakota Farmers Union's website, National Farmers Union's website. Connect with your lawmakers. Let them know why we need this legislation and need to get this done.
Aaron Scheer, appreciate the visit today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's pick up with Zach Marcus. The topic, do you want to pick that up and see what we can do on the Medicaid expansion in South Dakota? What do you think, Carla? Can you pick that up? Talk a little health care and Medicaid expansion, important to a lot of people in the state.
Yeah, Zach, where do you think we're at in the polls right now with it?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, everybody. I'm feeling very confident in our chances in November. You know, I think voters, when they hear what this will do, it just becomes so obvious why this is the right vote, right? We're talking about 42,500 hardworking South Dakotans who are doing everything right, who are following the rules, who are working hard, and still just can't get over that line and can't afford health care, right? So that's piece one. Piece two, we're talking about our tax dollars that we've been paying all these years, $1.3 billion of our taxes over the first 5 years of this program coming back into our state. That's money that we've paid coming back to us. And then bottom line for the state budget, we're going to save $63 million over the first 2 years of this program. So we're actually seeing a net savings from doing this, right? So when we think about all of that together, what we're gaining, how it's good for our state's economy, all that working together, it just makes sense, right? So I think I'm feeling really good about where we stand.
Zach, Luke here with Farmers Union. And as a representative of Farmers Union, obviously, you know, we advocate for rural South Dakota. Talk to us about what this will do to individuals in rural South Dakota, not only individuals, but, you know, medical facilities in rural settings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that we know is that most of the folks who fall into this coverage gap we're talking about here live in rural communities in South Dakota, right? So, you know, when we think about what that means, when we think about when, if you're not insured, you got to think long and hard before you go see a doctor, right? That's an expensive visit. And then by the time you're really seeing someone, the care is more expensive for you because we've gotten farther along in our diseases. Potentially, it's more expensive for the clinic or the hospital facility to provide that care for you. And the more that that happens, the more that that compounds and makes a budget risk, right? So that's why it's really important that we do this, so that medical facilities across rural areas in South Dakota can stay open, can continue to function, can continue to bring in the money they need to see patients.
I am 29. Zach, can you talk to us about that? It's been removed from the ballot. Can you give us a little bit of backstory?
Yeah, so I am 28, and it last Monday, it was the sponsor officially filed to remove it from the ballot. It was a similar program to what we were trying to do. It would have brought Medicaid to the state, Medicaid expansion to the state in the state statute, but not into the Constitution as we want to do. And so, you know, after conversations with folks in that campaign, we sort of came to an understanding that, you know, it just made more sense to move together with one campaign, putting forward one thing to have voters vote on. And because ours is a constitutional measure, there's just more, it makes it more difficult for anyone to mess with this in the future, right? So when the voters of South Dakota vote for this, we want to make sure that they actually receive what they voted for, right? And this seemed like the best way to do that.
Well, and I was only one digit off on the initiated measure. But
that was my
point.
Yeah, I can't count.
What do you do?
I'm from Iowa. You know, I did the best I could.
I think the big thing is that, Zach, you know, it shows unity, does it not? I mean, it shows that this is an important issue and that we're all focused on one goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also shows, you know, the very broad coalition that's come together for this, right? From across the political spectrum, from across the state, from different industries, from different walks of life, all kinds of groups who think that this is really important. And I think that's a big part of what, you know, makes this so compelling, is that there are so many reasons and so many ways in which this is going to be transformative for the state of South Dakota. And that's why you see so many different kinds of groups engage with this.
We appreciate your visit today, Zach.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll visit with the advisory council, Chaz Blosky. We'll be talking a little bit about that five-member committee. From Peer, Mitch Richter gives us an update on what we're watching for there. And no Laura Davison with us today, but I'll tell you, we're going to talk about emerald ash borer, national pine beetle, and shelter belts from Dr. Tree, Dr. John Ball.
Good morning. We now have Chaz Blosky. He has been recently elected to the Junior Advisory Council of South Dakota Farmers Union Youth Program. Welcome, Chaz.
Thank you.
Say, we were just going to be talking about some of your goals for the year. What do you have?
Oh, some of the goals for my year is to get closer to the rest of my council members and also be prepared to make a better camp and to bring more leadership to the camp.
Do you have any tips for incoming campers on how they can make the most of the opportunity?
Tips I would give to newcoming campers would probably be, it's okay to break out of your shell, and also to be outgoing, and just to be yourself out there.
Good. Do you have any specific areas that you're wanting to increase on for the camps?
I think camps are a really good thing the way it is right now, but there's some things I would like to bring on to camp more. I would like to learn about legislative and the government process to things, but also improve everyone's leadership skills and communication skills when it comes to things.
You just had a leadership training last week. Did you have anything from that that you're going to be able to bring to camp?
Oh, we did have a leadership thing, and it was very eye-opening. We did this one activity where we found out what color we were as a person, if we were outgoing, more talkative, more of a born leader type deal. I think that was very beneficial to me. I learned different ways to communicate and approach different colors as a person.
So were you able to apply that to your family at home?
I did apply it to my family at home. To me, when I got home, I learned out why my grandpa is some of the things that he is as being a leader, dealing with them, different actual bosses, employees around the ranch.
It really makes it interesting, doesn't it?
Makes it very interesting. And also, just how they think and how they process different problems and how they solve different problems, actually.
And how you need to communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the most important thing there, is to learning the art of communications. Have you been in contact with your other council members on any plans?
Oh, yeah. I've called them throughout the week, or they've called me, just to catch up on things, just to talk. We are all really good friends to each other. I mean, I call them my lifelong friends. So most of them I'll remember throughout my whole life. I mean, they're just always there for me if I need something.
So are you working a job that you have to juggle with doing this too?
Yeah, I work on our family farm. We run about 400 head of cattle. We also farm, do corn, cane, all the little goodies. Personally, I run a little group of little head of cattle, but then I also run about 30, 40 head of goats, personally. I've had experience working on other farms, ranches, so it's juggling, but I mean, that's just how being mature and responsibility, which I love.
I understand you're about 17 years of age, is that right?
I am 17.
Well, let me tell you, you're quite the young man. And I know
Thank
a lot
you.
Of people that came from Winter, and you're at the head of the class, okay?
Well, I think I wouldn't say that, but...
Well, I would. I know the people from Winter. No, thank you for what you do, and thanks for what you're doing for all the Junior Advisory Council. I understand it's a 5-member council and keeps you guys busy, right?
It keeps us really busy. But, I mean, it's all to help the other campers, new campers, and help the camp go on in the future.
Chaz, we appreciate the visit. Keep us posted, okay?
Will do.
All right, Mitch Richter, you're a little older than 17. You're not from Winter, but how slow is it in Pierre right now?
Well, there's still quite a bit of activity going on. You got summer committees and those kinds of things, and you know the governor announced yesterday that last year we had $115 million more than we thought we were going to have, and so that went into the reserve fund, and I think that's going to become an issue in the next year or two. All this COVID money that we've had come into the state, you know, is getting turned over. Sales tax is getting applied to it. And so right now in the state, we have a 20.5% savings account over our general fund budget for 2023. So we used to think if you had 10%, that would be good enough, and now it's ballooned to 20%. It's $422 million in our reserve fund. And with the needs in South Dakota, you know, we kind of like to see some of that money get spent or on things like, you know, corrections, mental health, education, continued infrastructure development. So $100 million would go a long ways to enhancing some of those programs.
Mitch, Luke here. All this money that's going into the reserve, are we using that money at all, or is it going anywhere? I know you're saying there's some turnover with this COVID money. Have we done anything, though?
No, there isn't. Once it goes into that reserve fund, it takes a 2/3 vote of the legislature to bring it out. And so The state law says that any money that's left over at the end of the year has to go into that reserve fund. And so there's ways to change that. They'd have to pass some new statutes to address that. But I think it's time that we start to look at that, because for the last 10 or 12 years, we've had excess revenue every year. And we're probably going to see that over the next couple of years, because a lot of that COVID money doesn't have to be spent until 2026. So there's projects in the works to get that spent, whether it's water development, infrastructure development along the lines of broadband and some of those types of things. So that money will get spent in the next couple of years. But when it does get spent, it gets taxed, and we need to either account for that when we adjust our revenue estimates for the year, or we need to figure out a way at the end of the year to put it into account that does not take a two-thirds vote to spend it.
Mitch Richter, I appreciate all you do in Pierre. Thanks for keeping us informed.
Thanks, Bill.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree.
Joining us now is a guy we lovingly call Mr. Tree in South Dakota, Dr. John Ball. Dr. Ball, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Normally we talk about the emerald ash borer, and I guess we have talked about it all over the state, but you had an announcement we're making this morning about Brandon, but you can probably tell us about emerald ash borer, what it's doing to South Dakota.
Well, yeah, let's start there. Emerald ash borer is that invasive beetle that arrived in the United States about somewhere in the 90s and arrived in South Dakota, or at least we found it first in South Dakota, about 2018 in Sioux Falls, and it's been spreading out from there. And this last Friday, I was able to confirm it in Brandon, South Dakota. Now, when I say confirmed it, there was a tree that had the usual symptoms, kind of a decline, sprouting at the base, and when I went up and looked at it, I found the D-shaped holes of the beetle and was able to find the larvae inside. So now Brandon is another city on our list that we're able to confirm has emerald ash borer in their ash trees.
Rapid City, you've been busy out there.
Yeah, now Rapid City, we've got the reverse. Out here, we've got the native pine beetles. And the pine beetles are causing a lot of problems right now because of the drought. And quite frankly, Bill, as I cross the state back and forth, I'm looking at shelter belts all over the place that are declining. Why? Because of the drought. I know in the Northeast, people are saying, wait, it's too wet. But a lot of the area states are still dry, and that is causing a lot of our tree problems right now.
For those people listening across the state of South Dakota, should we be watering trees? If so, how much right now, particularly with the fact that we occasionally get a derecho, suddenly get maybe a little bit of rain, but we're getting a lot more heat?
Yeah, right. We get a fire hose of water, and then it goes dry for a month. You know, the one that, if you can water once a week, that's fine. But let me put out a special request. Everyone that has new shelter belts out there in your listening audience, those shelter belts that went in last year or this year, all of those small seedlings, they need a pint of water a week. And so if you're not getting rain, and if you can get out there on your shelter belts and get them watered, that's paying forward. You know, that's the way to get the trees to live. I've looked at too many shelter belts this year, and they say, well, what can I spray? And I'd say, spray water. They don't have an insect. The drought's actually taking them out.
We had a lot of trees that met their Waterloo. What should be planted with those trees that have kind of went to the great tree approach in the sky?
Yeah, there you go. Well, I'll tell you, the new ash is actually a hackberry tree. It's native to South Dakota. It's a relatively fast-growing tree. And for shelter belts, that's the tree we're looking at as the ash replacement. So we're seeing a lot of those go in. And it's actually a pretty good tree for towns, too. We see it all over. So no matter who who's listening to us this morning, I mean by that, where you are, from Perkins County all the way down to Union County, you can plant hackberry. And it's a nice native tree. Wherever ash will grow, this tree will grow. So that'd be a good substitute.
Well, Bill, I'd be interested to seeing, you know, what is the turnover rate on trees with the storm damage that we've been having and ripping out of shelter belts? You know, how many trees are getting replanted? Just a thought I had there. Bill, I want to make one comment just on the earlier discussion that we had on this pork facility. I think, you know, anything in agriculture, we're going to have some sort of odor, you know, and really in any industry as well. I mean, look at just public works, for example. It wasn't too long ago when we had some turnover in a lagoon, and boy, did it smell too, you know. So agriculture is very sanitary, and producers and industry take a lot of pride in that as well.
One other thing you're going to mention?
Yeah, South Dakota Soil Health Coalition and us are doing a field event this Thursday, 10 a.m. at Scott Kolosik Farm in Wessington Springs.
For the thousands of our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show listeners, our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at Kello.